Massimo on the line. Massimo Mazzucco. Did I get your name correctly?
That is correct, Mark. Yes.
Okay. He's an Italian filmmaker, and he's got some really interesting films out. It's been a huge amount of time since we talked. I think we talked about the New American Century film and maybe Cancer, The Forbidden Cures last time you were on, Massimo. But, I didn't realize that you were a person interested in the moon landing and the moon landing hoax,
Oh, yes.
which is something I'm just incredibly interested in. So, do you mind if we talk about that a little bit tonight?
Not at all, actually. The funny part of the moon landing is that I was born actually on July 20th. Okay, so on July 20, 1969, the day of the so-called moon landing, I was turning 15. Not only that, but for the first time that night, I kissed my first girlfriend. I had my first kiss.
Wow.
So I have this incredible clear memory of myself up in this little town in the summer of Italy, and all the bars downstairs with the televisions on, the black and white flickering televisions on, and everybody's sitting outside at 4 in the morning. And I remember thinking, I mean, this is for me. I mean, I was the center of the universe, of course, my birthday, and I get to kiss my first girlfriend, and they go to the moon. This is for me. So it had a very special meaning for me.
Right.
Then what happened is that later in life, I became a fashion photographer. And I forgot about the Apollo moon landing thing, of course. But one day, as a photographer, I just bumped into the moon pictures again, as with the eye of a professional. And I said, "Oh my God, what is this SHIT?" Because it was so badly done. I mean, for a photographer, for a professional, it's so badly done. It's such a botched out job. So I started looking into it. And of course, with this background as a photographer, I know for sure. I mean, I can tell, I can read the light. I know where the actual sources of the pictures are, of the light in the pictures are. I can tell that it's not the sun, but it's a source that's very near, so it's artificial light. I can tell all kind, I even can tell the quality of the light not being the quality of the sun. Now, of course, this is for an expert. So it's like an expert on paintings, for example. He can tell immediately a fake Rembrandt from a real one, while to me they look exactly the same. So my real problem is, and in making this film, which I'm making now, which is called, it's going to be called American Moon, and should be ready in a few months. My real problem is to find a way to explain to others why these pictures are fake. So whatever is obvious to me, it's not obvious to everybody. So that's the difficult part. But I can just give you one little quotation to give you an idea of what a professional thinks of those pictures.
Okay.
In my early life, I was an assistant. I learned actually the trade photography from one of the most famous photographers worldwide. His name is Oliviero Toscani. He made the famous campaign of Benetton in the United States and many more. So when I started looking into these pictures, I called him up. We're still friends. And I said, "Oliviero, what did you think the first time you saw the Apollo pictures?" And his actual answer was, and I quote him, he says, "Had they given the job to me, I would have done a much better job." This was, so photographers know. Photographers know. Trying to show it, that's the difficult part. But we're getting there.
Didn't they actually have to take these photographs with the cameras down by their waist?
The cameras were strapped to their chest.
Okay.
And one of the funny parts is that they had no viewfinder.
Yeah.
And for those cameras, the Hasselblads, which are 2.25 by 2.25, to actually aim straight without a viewfinder, that's already an achievement in itself. But that can be achieved. I mean, you can be lucky and shoot straight. That's not really the issue. With the photography, the main issue is the lighting, the so-called drop-off areas, meaning when you look at the picture, for example, if you look at the picture of a desert on Earth, you will see, because the sun is so large, that anywhere from near you, 3 feet from you to 3,000 feet from you, the desert is lit exactly the same, because the sun is so much bigger and so much powerful that there is no difference. If you look at the moon pictures, the astronaut is lit with a certain brightness, but around him, like 20, 30, 40 feet behind him, you have this drop-off. The light drops off and becomes much darker. So that is obviously not the sun, because the sun would light both areas, the close, the foreground and the background, exactly the same. And instead, you have this sitting in this pool of light, and all around this darkness. And how can you explain that unless this is an artificial spotlight?
So what you're seeing is an artificial light.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's absolutely clear that there's an artificial light. And don't the shadows go in different directions? And that's a clue
also,
as well.
Also the issue of the shadows and directions is very complicated because there's a lot of confusion on the internet about this. Most people confuse converging and diverging shadows, which are vertical to you, in other words, going away from you or coming to you, mm-hmm. with sideways shadows. When you shoot, for example, if you look ahead of you and the sun is behind you, and you have two stones next to you, one to the right and one to the left, you will see that the two shadows of the two stones will converge.
Okay.
But that does not mean that two sources were used. That's simply the effect of the perspective.
Okay.
Because you're looking forward. Same thing if you're looking, if you have the sun into the camera and it's looking at you, and the two stones will have this divergent shadow. So when the light is straight to you, either front or behind, there's no way to tell where the source is. When the light is next to you on the right-hand side or left-hand side, then the shadows on the ground should be totally parallel, absolutely parallel. And in many pictures, they're not. Mm. In many pictures, you can see them converging, or actually diverging, even though the source is to the left of the picture, which means the source was very close to the objects and not the sun.
So yeah. If the sun is on the left or it's on the right, we yeah. should not see converging or diverging.
No, they should be absolutely perfectly parallel.
Ah,
because there is no perspective effect left to right. The only perspective that you can have is looking forward or looking behind you vertically in relation to you. But sideways, there's absolutely no effect of perspective. So if you go out on a day out in the country and you look at the shadows of the trees, you will see that if the sun is behind you, the shadows of the trees will seem to converge going away from you. That's the perspective. But if you step aside and put the sun on your left-hand side, 90 degrees left or 90 degrees right, mm-hmm. you will see on the ground that the shadows are perfectly parallel.
I see.
Now imagine you take two little batteries, two Duracell batteries, mm-hmm. set them up next to each other, and put a little lamp next to it, illuminating both Duracell batteries.
Mm-hmm.
You would see that the shadows will diverge because the light is very near.
Mm-hmm.
If you take the same two little batteries in the same position and you use the sun, those two shadows will be exactly parallel. So whenever you have sideways illumination and converging shadows, it means you're using an artificial light which is very near the source. It's not the sun.
So you'll have convergence if the light is on the right, if the light is artificial and it's close.
Yes. Yes,
so this is like cut and dry, though. I mean, there's no
There's no way around that. There's no way. You can't argue with that.
So I would love to hear you and one of these other people that are very pro-landing, talk. Because it sounds like you've got it cut. I mean, it's cut and dry.
It is. I'm actually, in the film I'm making, I'm using only like 7, 8, there are maybe 50 talking points or arguments uh-huh. on the moon landings. I only pick those 8 or 10 that are, as you say, cut and dry. In other words, that you can't really argue about it. Another one is the, for example, the sound delay. Any radio communication going to the moon and coming back, so a question coming from Houston to the moon and the answer coming back from the moon to Houston should take at least 2.6 seconds, 1.3 to go, and assuming the astronaut replies immediately, that's another 1.3 seconds. So 2.6 is the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
I found instances in which the astronaut replies 0.9 seconds after.
Uh-huh.
So that could not be on the moon. And this is on the original tapes, not on any YouTube copy of it. So we know that those are the original unedited tapes. And yet, for example, Houston going, are you getting too near that rock? Yes. like the guys next door. There should be at least 2.6 seconds before between the question and the answer. And that is if the astronaut replies immediately. But sometimes you have 0.8, 0.9. So this thing is really hard to argue against. And I prefer to use like only 10 arguments, but absolutely sure. Uh-huh. There are also other instances in which you can see a flag waving.
Yes.
Without the astronauts touching it.
Exactly.
See, here again, it's a big confusion on the internet, on the debate, because the confusion is, oh yeah, of course the flag is waving because the astronaut is touching it, so it's actually waving because of being in the emptiness, absence of atmosphere, mm-hmm. But it's not because of the air. Mm-hmm. Sure. That's true. You cannot tell. When the astronaut is touching the flag, you cannot tell whether he's waving because of the air or because of his hand. But when the astronaut is not touching it and is a few feet away, and suddenly the flag goes zoop a couple of times, that can only be air that moved it. And, of course, we know that there is no air on the moon.
This is so great. I need to write all these concrete arguments down because I really like these real concrete arguments. Here's one I'll throw in. It's a little probably different. Maybe you didn't use this one or not. But one of the things I find very strange is that the lunar module was only tested a couple of times. They had this tester, kind of a lunar module tester that they made, and Neil Armstrong tried to fly it twice.
Yeah.
And he crashed it twice.
And well, he had to bail out. Yeah, in this case, the debunker's reply is that the machine was completely different, which it was, in fact. Mm-hmm. It had, I think, four rockets instead of one. Also, being on Earth and the weight is completely different, so you can't really explain that. So that's one of those arguments that are not waterproof.
Yeah, you don't like that one as much.
But, for example, you could question, for example, why there is no flame under the LEM, the lunar module, when it leaves the moon. Mm-hmm. We have three instances, Apollo 15, 16, and 17, where the actual takeoff from the moon was filmed by the camera that was left by the astronauts on the moon. And in all three cases, you see absolutely no flame whatsoever under the rocket. Mm. And the same exact rocket in testing, when it tested on Earth, shows a huge flame coming out of the rocket, of course, of the nozzle.
Right.
So it's very hard just to explain why there is no flame, unless that is a little toy thing, you know, being lifted up by a little rubber band or something like that, exactly what it looks like, by the way.
Well, to get back to the lunar module thing, isn't it, though, very strange that they never successfully tested anything like that?
It is very strange. Everything is very strange. By the way, it's funny. I just finished printing publishing an article on my website now. Mm-hmm. About Donald Trump asking to send man to the moon on the first trip for Orion next year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but it's really funny. Because the Orion project, which is supposed to be the new project that will eventually take man back to the moon in 2021, I think,
mm-hmm.
his first scheduled flight is 2018 and is unmanned, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think I find it very funny and very great that Trump said, you know, why don't you put men on it while you're going?
Ah.
And he's put the whole NASA scrambling. He's got the whole NASA scrambling now for answers, because you can't say, oh, we really don't know how to do that. You know, so they said, we are evaluating the risk. And you just go, excuse me, you did it with no problem 50 years ago.
Exactly.
The technology that was basically primordial compared to today. Because, I mean, 50 years in half a century in technology is 5,000 years, basically, in man's evolution. And you did it with no problem 6, 7, 8 times in the 60s. And now it's a problem and it's a risk.
Now it's
so a problem. I find this very, I don't know if he's done it on purpose or not. I think he does. Because this man has a way to put the institutions in a very bad situation. I love this guy when he says, for example, he said to about the CIA, he said, oh, yeah, sure. This is the same guys who told us that that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
I mean, with one simple line, it can destroy the reputation. And now with NASA, it's the same thing. And you have these articles today. It's pretty much all over the place. Washington Post, Daily Mail, Bloomberg News. NASA, pushed by Trump, is trying to figure out how to put men on the first flight to the moon next year. Well, just go back to the drawing to where you were 50 years ago, and there should be no problem.
It's I really like Trump, and I love the fact that he's so honest. But the thing of it is where we are right now in the world is there have been so many public lies that the people of the earth have believed. There's going to be like this real shock while people are waking up to this. Wouldn't you agree?
On what exactly? In general, you mean?
Well, we've got 9/11. We've got the cancer cures like you've talked about that have been hidden us. You got the hoaxed moon landing. I mean, it goes on and on.
The marijuana, real story of marijuana. Also, it's interesting. One film I made, the true history of marijuana.
What is the true history? Throw a little of it.
The true history of marijuana is that it was suppressed in the 1930s. It has nothing to do with the drug aspect of it and has everything to do with the industrial aspect of cannabis. Cannabis in the 1930s was a huge problem for the upcoming petrochemical industry. You could make medicines from marijuana, you can make food, you can make combustibles, you can make clothing. And unless you got rid of cannabis, there was no way that synthetic textiles and synthetic medicine, lab medicine, could gain the upper hand unless you got rid of that. So they figure out this smear campaign, and they call it the devil's drug or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you have this ridiculous campaign against marijuana in the 40s and 50s, whose effects, unfortunately, still last today. Still today, you have people who think that marijuana is a stepping stone to a larger, to the harder drugs, even though there is not one scientific study on that that can prove that. But this has become so much embedded in our culture that people automatically assume that it's true. And if you look at the history, there is not one single scientific research that proves a connection between marijuana and heavier drugs. But again, you know, it's obvious once you understand what the industrial interest was behind suppressing marijuana, everything makes sense.
I've heard Hillary speak out against pot, but I think Bill Clinton is a well-known marijuana smoker, if I'm not wrong.
Those people are all over the place. When it's a matter of winning an election or losing an election, they just go all over the place. They'll say whatever they think they need to say at that time. I wouldn't take their words, you know, at face value ever, never.
So back to the moon landings again. What about the radiation on the moon and the temperature differential? Wouldn't that have an adverse effect on the film?
Oh, man. Absolutely. Let me put it this way. Earth is surrounded by the so-called Van Allen belts, radiation belts. These belts, which are magnetic fields, basically, are those that actually protect us. We are alive because of those belts, because in that they stop all the radiation, the cosmic radiation coming from outer space. Mm-hmm. We would not be alive if those radiation belts didn't exist. They were discovered in the late 50s by one Van Allen, James Van Allen. Mm-hmm. And they realized that space was very radioactive. Even going through those belts represented such a problem that Van Allen wrote, you know, you're going to have to figure out a big protection for astronauts to go out there, because you can't just cross them. You're going to fry, basically, by radiation. What happened is this was a problem and was considered a problem until the mid-60s. But then suddenly, and very strangely, when the time for Apollo to go to the moon came, suddenly this stopped being a problem. they just went and they said, oh, radiation is really very low, there's not a problem. And I said, okay, fine, you know, let's suppose that Van Allen was wrong, which is very unlikely because he had calculations. He wasn't just guessing. He had the instruments that measured this radiation. But anyway, let's suppose that he was wrong. Well, now it turns out that in the Orion project, again, NASA is saying this is a very dangerous area. Before we cross it and before we put people through the Van Allen belt, we have to study and find a way to protect them. So you have this funny timeline in which the Van Allen belts were very dangerous, quote unquote, until 1965, 66. They suddenly became not dangerous for 3 years, 69 to 72. And after that, they're dangerous again.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you draw your own conclusions there. The other thing you mentioned is temperature.
Right.
On the moon, you have, I don't know in Fahrenheit, but...
Celsius.
Yeah, and Celsius is plus 120 degrees, which is over the boiling point of water.
Right.
And minus 100 in the darkness, in the shade. Because there is no atmosphere that acts as a cushion, temperature cushion between one and the other. So basically you have these astronauts going from the shade at minus 100, which is probably 200 and something Fahrenheit.
Exactly.
I'm not sure, but it's pretty much down there.
Yeah.
They go from minus 200 to plus 300, I think. I don't know. I would have to look up the conversion, but it's a huge, huge, huge jump. And they go from shadow to light and back to shadow like there's no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And have this little support, life support thing on their back, which is supposed to also regulate the temperature. But, I mean, I never knew that a machine existed that can send you from minus 100 to plus 100 and in 2 seconds. I mean, that is so magic that why didn't we develop that and commercially exploit it?
Sure.
And made it. I mean, you could go to the desert today and be absolutely cool.
Absolutely.
If you use that. But nobody ever thought of making that machine for humans on Earth. And also this regards to the pictures again. Photography and cameras have the same problem. When you go into the sunlight, the thermal expansion that you get on the camera, because it's made of metal,
mm-hmm.
is such that the whole camera inside, the mechanism, technically they swell. They really swell,
mm-hmm.
because of the thermal expansion. Then you go into the darkness, they should shrink to a point where the mechanism blocks. Just to give you a reference, on Earth, you cannot go with a camera like that, with the Hasselblad, you cannot go below 40 degrees Celsius, and the camera blocks. And
really?
There you have 100 degrees Celsius under, and the camera still works. So again, magic.
Wow. You can take that same camera.
And the radiation on the film too.
Yeah.
Once you do get out, if you do get out of the Van Allen belts and get on the moon, to the moon, you are literally bombarded by cosmic radiation. All kinds, alpha rays, gamma rays, X-rays. There's one calculation that 4 particles per second of gamma rays or other particles should hit your film at any given time. So what you should have, because there's no way to protect your film inside the camera, there's no protection. Those cosmic rays go through everything, including the astronaut's suit. But, you know, forget the astronauts. Let's say they're Superman. They don't have a problem with that. You still have this radiation going through the camera, and yet the pictures are perfect. Anyone who has taken pictures in the 80s and 90s with the film cameras knows that you cannot put film through any kind of radiation unless the film get fogged. So those films should be completely fogged because of the radiation, and yet they are perfectly... absolutely perfect and untouched. There are so many arguments that you can bring against. And the other funny part is that the bunkers, or those who claim that we did go to the moon, have their own set of proofs, of course, that we went, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So let's be fair here and even-handed.
Sure.
They have, for example, they tell you there's a laser reflector,
right,
that you can shoot a beam from the Earth to it and it will come back. This proves that we went to the moon because the laser reflector is there. That's one argument. Well, guess what? 4 years before they allegedly went to the moon in 1964, both the Russians and NASA were able to shoot a laser beam to the moon and read it back on Earth without any kind of reflector.
Wow.
Okay? So that makes it completely moot in terms of that argument. The other argument for the moon is Help me out. They're so stupid that I tend to forget them. I'm sorry.
You were talking about the reflecting laser.
No, no. Other arguments that they use to say we did go to the moon is obvious. The lunar rocks. The lunar rocks.
Well,
We have so many lunar rocks, which are so different from Earth rocks, unless we really went to the moon? Well, again, first of all, those rocks could have been picked up by a machine.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to send men. Russians actually send a machine to pick up rocks and bring them back without it was unmanned. So we could have actual moon rocks on Earth without having to send men there. And the other answer is that those rocks are really so similar in composition to the Earth rocks that they could just be Earth rocks and they were manipulated, irradiated maybe a little bit to make them a little different. But there's really not so much difference. So that's also another argument that doesn't prove anything.
Mm-hmm. And that's a very good point. I had never thought of that. You could send a robot up there to get rocks, and they did, evidently.
Oh, the Soviets did. Yeah. Twice, I think.
And it's interesting. The Soviets were always way ahead of us in the space race, too.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, we went ahead
of them. Yeah, I was studying the actual dealings between the United States and Russia at the time of Kennedy and Khrushchev.
Mm-hmm.
And I found one very interesting historical moment in which Kennedy realizes that after, you know, he's thrown the hat over, how do you say, throw the hat over the wall, to go to the moon, the Russians were not going to compete.
Right.
He realized he was actually alone. And at one point he had a speech, I think it was in front of the United Nations, where he says, it was 1963, I propose that the Soviets and the United States go to the moon on a joint mission.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the reply from Khrushchev 1 month later, who says, basically, I'm sorry, that you know, we have no idea how to get there. We cannot even think of how we're going to make it. And let alone, you know, we wish you the best. We're going to watch how you guys do it. We want to see you actually land. And even more than that, we want to see how you take off again from the moon. And basically, Kennedy found himself, you know, painted in a corner,
right.
Painted himself in a corner because, again, the whole race to the moon thing was actually a one-way race to the moon, which was fueled by the propaganda that the United States themselves put out there, because we're going to go to the moon, we're going to land on the moon, we're going to go this, we're going to go do that, we're going to colonize the moon, which never happened, by the way.
Right.
And then the Russians, you know, yeah, they did have a program that lasted a couple of years, but it failed completely. They had one rocket that was called the N1, the Soviets, that was supposed to make it to the moon, but it exploded 4 times out of 4 on the testing ground, on the testing launch.
Wow.
So they actually never really tried. So the so-called race to the moon never really happened. It was a one-way thing. What I believe happened is this. Up to 1967, NASA was really trying to make it to the moon before the end of the decade. In 67, something happened. There was a big accident. Three astronauts were burned alive inside the capsule, Apollo 1.
Right.
After that, the whole program came to a complete halt. More than 1 year was spent redesigning completely the capsule. And they were already late on the schedule in 67 when this happened. So just imagine 1 year out of three added to the program, what could have done. What I think that happened at that point is that they had been boasting so much about going to the moon that there was no way they could say, oops, sorry, we're not going to make it. So they had to fake it. It was the only solution because they would have looked like idiots in front of the world. So, you know, because of all the simulators that they had, and I found some incredible material that shows how could they actually simulate, and they did simulate, entire missions to and back from the moon on Earth, including including the walks on the moon surface.
Mm-hmm.
They had all the material there. They have these TV monitors that show, they had this camera that went very near a moon model that was very extremely detailed, exactly like the moon. And this camera went very near. You could actually fake the images of landing on the moon, taken from the LEM on Earth. And I'm sure that they got to this point when they said, you know what, guys, we can simulate the whole thing. There's absolutely no difference in terms of images. So let's not just look like idiots and not do it and say we can't do it. Let's just use his images.
Do you think Kennedy knew that it was a hoax, or was he in the dark?
No, because he died before this became a problem.
This
was actually a Johnson problem. Kennedy died in 63. And by then, they were having the first, I think there was the last Mercury missions, and even Gemini program had not started yet. So by then, he was, you know, they knew they were behind. But 7 years looked like a lot of time, and so you would never know. What I found interesting is that James Webb, the NASA director at the time, who was actually the person who convinced Kennedy that we could go to the moon. There were conversations between Kennedy and Webb where Kennedy is very weird and says, "Are you sure we can do this?" And Webb says, "Absolutely." This is from the Kennedy Library recording. And Kennedy says, Webb says, "Absolutely, we can do it. No problem. We're going to have this big booster that's going to lift up all that we need to lift up," and so on. So this is James Webb in 1962 and 1963. Well, the same James Webb in 1968, just 3 months before Apollo 8 allegedly went to the moon, and 6 months before Apollo 11 went to the moon, suddenly decides to resign.
Oh.
I mean, this is the guy who has put his whole life on the line to go to the moon. He has bet everything that he had on the fact that we're going to the moon. And we are 6 months away from reaching the goal, and he decides to resign. That, to me, is extremely meaningful. I think he was an honest person. He didn't want to go along with a lie, and therefore just said, "You know what, guys, you do this. I'm not going to be part of this."
And you wouldn't have to have all of NASA knowing that it was a hoax.
This is another argument. Well, how could they pull such a hoax with 400,000 people work for NASA? Some of them would have spilled the beans by now and all that. You've heard this argument.
Sure.
Both for 9/11, for the Kennedy assassination, for the moon hoax. It's always one argument that they use. Of course, it says nowhere does it say that everybody had to be informed, in particular in NASA. Yes, they did have 400,000 people working for them, but they were all scattered in different companies all across the country. One company in Ohio was doing the spacesuits. One company in Florida was working on the second stage of the rocket. One company in New York was working on the LEM. They had no communication within each other, and there was no need to let them know. So all you need to do is get the lunar module from them. You don't have to tell them, "Oh, by the way, we're not going, you know, so don't worry about it, even if it breaks, it doesn't work." You don't have to do that. So only very few people needed to be in the know. And actually, I think I figure out how they did it. If you were to change the feed, simply manipulate the feed that comes to the dish that's transmitting the images from the moon live. I mean, put it this way, Mark. Imagine that you go one night, you go out to the movies, and while you're gone, I sneak into your house, I go behind your TV set, I change the wiring, so to speak, and instead of the antenna, I put a video recorder with a porn film on it. You come back home and says, "Okay, I'm going to watch some news now." You turn it on and you get a porn film on it.
Right.
You go, "What the hell is this?" And you probably call the company, the network, saying, "What are you guys broadcasting?" So you can do the same, imagine the same thing, by simply manipulating the input signal that came to the out of the dish that was receiving the images from the moon. You could really broadcast anything you wanted, not a porn film, of course, but you could simply broadcast images that were pre-recorded and make them look like they was alive. And so the people at NASA, the people in Houston who are cheering and clapping and everything, those are actually the first ones who get cheated on, who are lied to. They think that you went to the moon. So you don't have, not only don't you need to have those people in the know, but they are actually the first ones to be. I'm missing the word here, to be...
Duped?
Duped. Thank you very much. Yes.
Wasn't there a Coke bottle in one of the scenes?
Yeah, I'm sorry. No. That is something that I could not...
verify.
Yeah, no. Okay. It's only all we know about this Coke bottle is in the film by Percy called Something Happened on the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
He has an interview with this old Australian lady who could swear that she saw a bottle, a Coke bottle, roll on the floor. I would think that would be very stupid for anybody to. I mean, that's not the kind of mistake that you make if you're filming, especially if you're pre-filming. Because imagine that those images that were sent out as if they were live, they were not live at all. So anybody would have seen that if this lady could have seen it. I think it's one of those things that actually weakens the theory of the moon hoax instead of strengthening it. Well, I'm steering away from all those things. Okay. Unless you can corroborate something, to me, it doesn't even exist in the debate.
Okay. What about the photograph with the letter C on the rock? Have you ever seen
also,
that?
I find it a very weak argument.
Okay.
That C could, as a photographer, I can tell you, that C could be anything. A hair on the negative is most likely what could have happened. And again, why put a C on one specific rock when you have so many rocks all over the place? And they said it was a prop and it was marked as a C. But any photographer on a studio framing that would have seen that C. It doesn't make any sense that they would take a picture like that. And it was probably either a hair on a negative or simply the shape of the stone that looked like a C, but it's not a good argument at all to me.
Well, let me ask you this, and this is something I've gone back and forth on a little bit. You know, they say that, you know, the sky was completely black, but I would think that the reflectivity of the moon, could it have caused that, or is that an example of a hoax?
Well, the question is, why are there no stars in the pictures?
Exactly. Okay.
That is also another false claim.
Yeah, that's a weak argument, isn't it?
It is. Not only that, it's false. Anybody who has taken pictures with film in the 80s and 90s knows that in order to get the stars to show on your film, you have to go down in terms of exposure time, at least 2 seconds or 4 seconds of shutter speed. Mm-hmm. Very slow, like click, like that.
Yeah, that's slow.
Shooting at 1/250th of a second, which is the actual shutter speed that they had on the Hasselblad, because you're shooting with the sun, no way in heaven you would see stars, even if they were there. So whether they went to the moon and took those pictures or not, it is correct that there are no pictures, because the shutter speed was 250th of a second. At that speed, you can barely freeze a racing car going by. There's no way you're going to see a star on your negative or on your film.
I'm so glad you say that, because a lot of people in the alternative community that I respect very much make a big deal about the stars. But the more I thought about that, I was of the belief that, it would be very likely that the stars wouldn't show up. I'm glad to hear you say that.
If you take a film with the speed that they had, which was 64 ASA, so a rather slow film for the time, mm-hmm. Ektachrome 64, and aim it at the sky at night at 250th of a second in 5, 6, or 8, which was the actual frame aperture, mm-hmm. you get absolute black. Absolute black. There's no way that those stars would even faintly show, even though the stars on the moon apparently are more shiny and more brilliant because there's no atmosphere. But still, it would not make it enough to even far away show. You would not be able to see them. No.
So you could take the same camera, the same exact camera that they used, point it at the sky at night, click it, and it would just be all black.
Absolutely. Any camera, actually, doesn't have to be the Hasselblad. Any photo camera with film, you take a 64 ASA film, which is the speed of the ektachrome that they used, set it on 1/250th of a second, the shutter speed, 5.6 or 8, the frame, the f-stop, and shoot at even the brightest star will not show. You have to go down with the shutter speed at least 1 second, so it's 250 times more than 1/250th. Or even 2 seconds or 4 seconds before you can actually start to see something. So there's absolutely no way that would show. This problem, this issue, this argument became so important because it was raised first by Bill Kasich, the guy who wrote the book.
Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon? Is that
no, because we never went to the moon.
We
the
never
first
went.
Guy.
Yeah, okay.
The father, the so-called father of the moon hoax.
Yeah.
And I hate to have to throw him under the bus for this because, but you know, you have to be intellectually honest. That was a mistake on his part.
Right.
And it's a legitimate mistake because he was not a photographer. And it is intuitive that you say, wait a minute, why are there no stars? You would imagine that you see them. But again, you know, take a film camera, go out at night, and you'll see that it's absolutely impossible to see the stars.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. I have a true expert now on the show, finally.
Absolutely. I mean, on photography, yes, I don't feel too arrogant in saying that I know what I'm talking about. I was a photographer for 30 years, professional, top level, worldwide. So I know what I'm talking about. Also, another wrong argument, so we can complete the wrong arguments or false arguments, which you might have heard, is that how come there are no, you know those fiducials, the little crosses that are the crosshair. Mm-hmm. In some cases, one claim has it that, why do they disappear behind the object? They're supposed to be in front, and they're not, so it means they were added later, so the pictures are not genuine. Again, this is a false claim. If you take the original pictures from the NASA website, the high quality, high definition pictures, you will see that even in the cases that they point out, the crosshair are always there. They become a little faint because of a backlight effect, it's called. So when a crosshair goes over something white, then it kind of edges, smooches off the edge, but it's still there. So that's also one false claim. Look, there are three basically false claims that you need to remove from the debate if you want to do it correctly. One is that why there are no stars on the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Two is the crosshair thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is that the shadows are diverging or converging. Therefore, so goes the claim, they used multiple sources of light.
Have convergent or divergent shadows in the case where the sun is in
it
front of you or behind you.
Behind you, absolutely. Or imagine two people standing in front of you, 10 feet away, 30 feet away, and the sun behind them, so in front of you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the lens you're using, their shadows coming towards you will be diverging.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So from their feet coming away. Yet, if you could raise yourself up on top of them and you could look down, those shadows would be perfectly parallel. It's the perspective effect of the lens.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's the fugue. I don't know if you call it the fugue point in Italian is something like that. The infinite point. You know, whenever you draw a city, you put a little dot in the middle, and then you draw your lines from that dot, and they go on both directions, and they become wider and wider as they come close to you. That's the perspective effect. And that only happens when you're looking straight forward into the source of light, or when the sun is behind you. Again, you know, the example of the two big stones next to you, one to the right and one to the left, and you have the sun behind you, and you shoot down at those two stones, you will see the shadows that are converging. But again, if you could lift yourself up and look down 90 degrees down on the ground, you would see that those shadows are perfectly parallel.
Very interesting.
Turn 90 degrees on the side, look at the same two stones with the light now coming from the side, and they have to be parallel. That is, if the source is the sun. If they're still converging, or diverging actually, that means that the source is much closer. And therefore you have an indication that artificial light was used.
Very interesting. Now, I think the International Space Station is really up there. What are your thoughts?
Oh, you're talking about this theory that everything is fake, basically?
Yeah, now basically everything is fake now, right?
Yeah, I'm also a filmmaker. Not only I was a photographer, but I am a filmmaker. I have seen, first of all, I don't see the point of faking it because it's really not a problem. Anything that happens below the Van Allen belts, the ISS, the International Space Station, and every other mission that was done in the history of astronautics, it's all very possible. It's not a problem. You can send a man in space within the Van Allen belt. So I don't see the reason to fake that and pretend it's real. The complications with faking something like that would be so much that it becomes really difficult to imagine that they're faked. But I have seen and you can find them on YouTube, some videos of ISS astronauts, so International Space Station astronauts, that show you around the space station.
Mm-hmm.
They actually float around and away and go left and right and up and down and back and forth for 20 minutes in a row, mm-hmm. without cuts.
Yeah, how would you fake that?
Yeah, to fake that, I mean, believe me, when you look at the film, for example, what was it called? Gravity, I think.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Okay, well, you can see sequences of 5, 10, 15 seconds in which the astronaut seems to be floating through one chamber of the space station. But to go in all directions for 20 minutes without a cut, that means you really are building a 360 environment, and it's very difficult to do that. It's not impossible, but again, it's extremely difficult, and I really don't see the point. I don't see why there shouldn't be a space station up there by now. I mean, that I see no problem. Anything that happens below the Van Allen belts, I see no problem. And strangely enough, the Apollo missions are the only ones that allegedly went outside the Van Allen belts, crossed them. Another thing, just so tell me if you want me to stop, because now you got me going.
No, continue.
Another thing that's very interesting is this. For example, the Van Allen belts were supposed to be a problem. Apollo 1 was the big tragedy. Then you have Apollo 2, 3, and 4, which were unmanned missions. You only had Apollo 6 and 7, which were within the Earth orbit. And then suddenly, from one day to the next, you have Apollo 8, which is sent out to the moon, to circle the moon before they landed. Mm-hmm. Apollo 8 was December of 68. And they didn't even send a monkey out there before they did.
Right.
Normally, you don't send people where you haven't sent a monkey first, right?
Sure.
Exactly. And suddenly, you got these three people sent out through the Van Allen belts without nobody knowing that they would be harmless, as we're told they were, because you haven't found out yet. You haven't been there. And if you listen to the communications, these people don't even talk about crossing them.
Right.
They're like, oh, look at the toothpaste, the toothbrush. It floats. Look at this, is magic. I mean, that's really the top point of the conversation, from the Earth to the moon. I mean, you would expect to hear something like, okay, we're getting closer now. I still feel nothing.
Right.
I'm fine.
Right.
You know, something like that. At least, oh boy, we made it through. Apparently, we're still alive. Something like that. Nope, nothing. Absolutely forgotten. The script was very bad, I would say, in that case.
You know, in one way, I find the whole moon landing thing humorous, but in another way, it's very disturbing.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Because
humorous, but if you think, where did all that money go?
Exactly.
If it really didn't go to, if the LEM, the lunar module, is actually a piece of, can I say shit?
Yes.
Put there on some fake set, where did the actual money to build the real thing go? The lunar module costed $22
billion. Billion?
Billion dollars of the time.
At the time? Time?
No, sorry. The equivalent today.
Oh, okay.
Of $22 billion today. So whatever it was at the time is $22
billion.
Okay? I mean, if you only going to build a machine that really doesn't go, doesn't fly, and it doesn't go anywhere, where did all that money go? So I have a feeling that there's a whole aspect here of siphoning money out of the public pockets and taking them probably some kind of secret military space program. I mean, only an idiot would think that NASA is not a military organization. I mean, they make it look like a civil organization, but, you know.
So you think we maybe have a higher technology that's just gone quiet?
Oh, I wouldn't even exclude that there's people on the moon right now.
Okay.
I would not. I mean, to me, they could be going back and forth with or without air machines even now. Remember that guy who was killed who said...
Phil Schneider?
No. Someone who said, who denounced the moon hoax and said, actually, we can go to the moon back and forth in 5 minutes with different machines, of course.
Wow. I didn't hear that.
Oh, yes. And there are actually men on the moon right now as we talk. So this was at the end of the 90s. And
wow.
You don't need air thing because there is atmosphere on the moon, he said. So I don't know what is true and what is not, but I would not have a problem at all believing that there are actual means to go and come back that we don't know about. What I do know for sure is that the Apollo missions were faked. That I can put my hand on the fire for that.
Well,
because photography background I have.
This is huge because I wish you could remember that fellow's name. And he was killed, right?
Yeah, he was killed in a freak accident, of course. One of those accidents where suddenly somebody decides he wants to kill you because you're not going to give him $10 or something. Yeah.
Goodness sakes.
No, I'll come back with you with that. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. So now we got to figure out why are we shown NASA when we have this much, much higher technology, right?
Well, I think NASA is a way to, again, siphon away a lot of money, public money from the taxpayers into something that we don't really know where it goes. I think that's the main purpose. Even, I mean, when they're talking about going to Mars right now.
Yeah, what's that all about?
Of course you can't go to Mars, period.
That's crazy.
You would fry in any, you would have to have such a protection. Because, you know, the story goes that, okay, so yes, there are cosmic rays out there, but the moon was only 7 days round trip, so it wasn't really that bad. I mean, not only I wouldn't want to try, but okay, let's say they're right. But going to the Mars and back is, I think, it's 6 months to go and 6 months back.
At least, yeah.
You can't sit in anything that doesn't have a 3 feet of lead covering you for 1 year in cosmic radiation. So where are you ever going to get the power to get off the ground all that lead that can protect you or any other system? You know, it doesn't have to be lead, but they still have to figure out a way to protect people. So it's, and yet, even though it's obvious that it's absolutely impossible, all we keep hearing is, oh, we're going to Mars Thursday, not Wednesday, actually next Monday, no, next Tuesday. But, you know, they keep pushing away, but it's still there next year, a few years from now. So obviously there is a reason to, because appropriations must be keep going. And that money, where does it go? I'm not sure, but I'm not sure I would want to find out at this point.
Huh. Well, that's the aspect of this that's a little depressing to me, is that there is this high technology that we don't know about, and yet they keep telling these bold-faced public lies over and over again.
I think they enjoy doing that. There's a perverted side to that, you know, pretending to be unable to do something while you know very well you can do that and more, but pretending to appear stupid and unprepared and technically not very good. I think they have a perversion on that, the military people.
So you think there is a secret space program, and do you think that the secret space program is on Mars?
I have no idea whether they really want to. I even when I look at the pictures of the Mars Curiosity thing, that little, you know, the Curiosity, what is it called?
The rover?
The rover, yes. Mm-hmm. I look at those pictures. Man, you take away the red filter and you got a picture of Nevada.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so freaking the same. Mm-hmm. So similar. Okay, let's say that Mars, but you know, it's, all these coincidences are so much. I don't even think that they went there and then this thing is broadcasting anything. And why would they send it anyway? You know, it's all, to me, it's all about appropriating money, big budgets, and giving that to the military-industrial complex. And what they do with that, I don't know. And again, I'm not sure I want to know at this point. But out in space, there was something. It started with the Star Wars thing in the 80s with Reagan.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember I made also a film on UFOs. It's called UFOs and the Military Elite.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, I remember somebody from whistleblower who says that 80% of the satellites that rotate around Earth are actually looking outside.
Hmm.
Not towards the Earth, towards the outside. So he says, so what are they looking for? So, you know, all that money, if the idea that we are looking for extraterrestrial threats out there cannot be said publicly, you do need to figure out a way to appropriate that money in some different way. And I can see nothing better than say, oh, we're going to Mars, we're going to this, we're going to there. And it's the easiest one. But it's obviously that they're not going to Mars. It's obvious. There's not even close to that. Anyway, we'll see.
So when does you got a new movie on the moon hoax, and that's coming out real soon?
Yeah. In fact, if you don't mind me plugging it.
Please do.
I'm still collecting, I'm fundraising. I need to travel and go interview all those photographers around the world, which is the last part of the movie. Mm-hmm. If anybody wants to give me a little help, they can go to GoFundMe on the GoFundMe site, and I have a page called American Moon. And you can make a donation there and can help me a little bit with the budget. It should be ready anyway between, I would say the Italian version will be ready by June, the summer.
Okay.
And a few more months maybe for the American one. First I do the Italian one, I put it out. Mm-hmm. I see what reactions, I just checked that I haven't made any mistakes. Make some corrections in case, because the American one is the most important, of course. So I always do the testing with the Italian version first. And by October, September should be out, and we can talk again about it if you want.
I'd love to. Yeah, I'd love to definitely talk about it again, because the moon hoax is one of my favorite topics.
There's also another aspect that I can see coming.
Okay.
You know, there's this new theory about the flat Earth.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Now I can see already many flat earthers, which I am not,
right,
by the way, saying, oh, yeah, they're going to use my film and saying, see, we never went to the moon, of course, because the Earth is flat and we can't go. So I'm going to have to figure out a way to remove this possibility from them, because that's not the reason why I make this film. I don't make it to prove that the Earth is flat. But they're going to use it. They already started using it, because they know here in Italy, they know I'm making this film. So anytime I come out with something interesting, I test out, I put out little feelers of something that I'm found out. And people say, oh, yeah, of course. Obviously, of course we didn't go to the moon, because the Earth is flat. You can't go anywhere. This is going to be a very difficult thing to face.
Hmm.
But anyway, one problem at a time.
Do you have a lot of flat earthers in Italy?
Oh, man, it's all over the place. Okay. It's all over the place. It's just, I really don't get it. I mean, I have as an attitude, I never close the door to anything unless I check it.
Right.
Okay? But I did check it in the beginning, a few months ago. I says, wait a minute, what is this? Let's look at it, you know? And all you need to do is very simple. If you, do you know how the map of the flat Earth is, you know, like the North Pole in the center, mm-hmm. round, and all Antarctica is all around. So basically, South America and Africa and the Pacific are very far away from each other, okay? Because they spread out in like a pie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that map was anywhere close to reality, a flight from Sydney to Chile, from South America to Australia, for example,
mm-hmm.
would take at least 35, 38 hours because of the simple distance.
Oh.
There are flights, and I checked. I have a friend who actually is from Chile and has a house in Australia, so he flies back and forth a lot. And I ask him, how long do you take to go from Santiago de Chile to Australia? He says 14 hours, usually 13 and a half, 14. So you can't have that. If the Earth were flat, you would take 30 hours. Not only don't we have any planes that can last more than 17 hours, I think. 17 hours is the longest flight nonstop that you can have on Earth. But even besides that, it takes 14 hours. And if you look at the map from the top and you look at South America and where Australia would end up with a flat Earth, is more than double. So that, to me, is enough to know that this is stupid.
Hmm.
Out of responsibility, I just checked it before I decided it was stupid, and I do find it stupid, yes.
Well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you again. Did you want to throw any more plugs in for your website or any of your movies, or have you written any books yet?
I've written a couple of books, but they're really based on the films I've made. For example, I wrote one called The Second Dallas. On the Robert Kennedy assassination.
Right.
But that was only in Italian. No, I haven't. I can't really write in English. I mean, I speak pretty fluently, but I'm not up to the task of actually writing a book in English.
That would be hard. And,
yeah, and besides, I like making films.
Sure.
Film, the visual really helps me a lot. That's my my turf. It's my language. So film is my thing, yeah.
And your website?
My website, it's only in Italian. I can mention it to you, but it's only in Italian. If anybody who understands Italian, actually, you can click the languages and it will translate somehow. It will Google translate into English. It's called luogocomune.net. I'll spell it for you. luogocomune.net. But again, it's in Italian, so okay. You're going to have fun going there. Yeah.
Well,
you're going to have to wait for my film, and then I'll send it to you when it's ready, and then we can talk again about it if you want.
Fantastic. I'd love to do that. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Mark. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.